What happens when a nation confronts its deepest contradiction? In 1895, a black congressman named Thomas Miller stood before a hostile South Carolina legislature and uttered words that would echo across centuries. "We were 8 years in power." He was pleading for the preservation of rights black Americans had gained during Reconstruction, rights that were about to be violently stripped away as white supremacy reasserted its grip. Fast forward to 2008, and America elected its first black president, Barack Obama. For 8 years, the nation watched a black family occupy the White House, embodying possibilities that had seemed impossible just decades before. Yet, history has a way of repeating itself. Obama's presidency didn't usher in a post-racial America. Instead, it triggered a backlash so fierce that it would eventually place Donald Trump in the Oval Office. This cycle of progress and retrenchment isn't an accident of history. It's the rhythm of American democracy, a nation perpetually wrestling with the original sin of building freedom on the backs of enslaved people. Picture sitting in a Harlem unemployment office at 31, attending a mandatory seminar about staying off welfare. That was February 2007, the same month Barack Obama announced his presidential campaign. The contrast was stark. A black man confidently pursuing the nation's highest office, while another struggled to find his third job in 7 years. Obama spoke authentically to both black and white America without code-switching or diminishing either identity. He embodied what Michelle Obama would later represent, a third road for black Americans, neither performing for white comfort nor turning every moment into protest, but simply being fully human. This authenticity opened doors. Major publications suddenly wanted deep explorations of race, creating opportunities for voices previously excluded from mainstream conversations. Obama's candidacy didn't just change politics, it temporarily shifted what stories America was willing to hear about itself. America prefers redemption stories that absolve everyone. We remember the Civil War as a tragic misunderstanding, not a brutal conflict over human property. This comfortable fiction lets white Americans claim their history without confronting its horror. Confederate leaders like Jefferson Davis and Alexander Stevens pioneered this revisionism immediately after the war, minimizing slavery's role despite their own wartime speeches explicitly defending it. By Gettysburg's 50th anniversary, President Woodrow Wilson celebrated the splendid valor of both sides while actively segregating the federal government. This pattern extends beyond the Civil War. When Bill Cosby blamed lower economic people for not upholding their end of the civil rights bargain, he channeled black respectability politics, demanding perfection from the oppressed while asking nothing of oppressors. His message resonated because it made no demands on white conscience. Many black Americans embraced it too, when structural change seems impossible, focusing on individual control offers the illusion of agency. Blacks comprised 13% of the population, but 49% of murder victims and 41% of prisoners. Was the solution really just better behavior, or was America avoiding a harder conversation? The South Side of Chicago covers 60% of the city and contains entire worlds of black achievement, entrepreneurship, and self-determination. Michelle Obama grew up where two-parent households were the norm, neighbors looked after each other's children, and being black wasn't defined by opposition to whiteness, but by the richness of community life. The Robinsons raised their children on board games and Brady Bunch episodes, creating such effective insulation that Michelle didn't become acutely aware of her blackness until Princeton. In functioning self-contained black communities, racial identity often recedes into the background, not because racism doesn't exist, but because daily life provides insulation from its constant assault. Michelle's sharp humor and grounded perspective were frequently misread as anger when they simply reflected common human traits. Her mother cut through this brilliantly. "Michelle, Barack, and my son are not abnormal. There's so much of that in the black neighborhood." What white America perceives as exceptional black achievement is often just black normalcy finally being noticed. The South Side taught Michelle she didn't need to code switch or perform. She could simply be herself. This lesson would prove both liberating and limiting as First Lady when authenticity itself became a political battlefield. Election night 2008 seemed to settle centuries of debate. Black people were undeniably American. Malcolm X's influence suddenly felt less urgent. Yet this victory contained the seeds of its own backlash. When Trayvon Martin was killed in February 2012 and George Zimmerman initially faced no arrest, national protests erupted with seemingly bipartisan support. Even conservative outlets agreed that a young man should be able to buy Skittles without being killed. Then Obama spoke. "When I think about this boy, I think about my own kids. If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon." Consensus shattered. Rush Limbaugh denounced his empathy. Conservative websites broadcast Martin's tweets and fabricated photos. Newt Gingrich attacked. "Is the president suggesting that if it had been a white who had been shot, that would be okay?" Zimmerman's legal defense fund collected $200,000 in 2 weeks. Before Obama spoke, Martin's death was a national tragedy. After, Zimmerman became a conservative patron saint. This transformation revealed a terrifying truth. Obama's ability to navigate between Black and white America was precisely what made him threatening. His presidency demonstrated integration's fundamental limitation. Acceptance depends on being twice as good, but half as Black. Slavery wasn't contrary to American democracy. It was foundational to it. The FHA systematically excluded Black families from wealth-building loans. New Deal programs discriminated by design. Redlining trapped Black families in deliberately disinvested neighborhoods. This isn't ancient history. It's your grandparents' generation, maybe your parents'. The case for reparations isn't about guilt. It's about recognizing that slavery began a continuing tradition of plunder. From the 1970s to 2007, America's prison population increased sevenfold to 2.2 million, 25% of the world's incarcerated, despite having only 5% of its population. Among Black men born since the late 1970s, 1 in 4 went to prison by their mid-30s. Among high school dropouts, 7 in 10. The claim that mass incarceration reduced crime has been debunked. Crime rates rose and fell similarly in Canada without increased imprisonment. California's three strikes law reduced felony crime just 2%, while increasing prison population 66%, costing taxpayers $53 billion. The result? Families destroyed, communities hollowed, and a permanent underclass stripped of voting rights, employment, and wealth. Donald Trump isn't simply a white man who became president. He's America's first white president, one whose entire political existence hinges on the fact of a Black president. His career began with birtherism and continued through documented racist actions. His purpose was negating Obama's legacy, not merely replacing him, but destroying his accomplishments. This is the essence of whiteness, being defined not by what you are, but by what you're not. When Obama took office believing he could work with conservatives, his very identity made cooperation impossible. McConnell declared making Obama a one-term president the GOP's primary goal. A healthcare plan with Republican origins suddenly became socialism. America then handed power to someone who introduced grab 'em by the pussy into national discourse. The message, if a Black man can be president, then any white man can be president. This isn't the end. It's a chapter in a longer cycle. Progress triggers backlash, but backlash exhausts itself. Thomas Miller's 1895 words still echo. "We were 8 years in power." Reconstruction's 8 years brought decades of Jim Crow. Obama's 8 years brought Trump. But each cycle plants seeds. New conversations, shifted consciousness, younger generations seeing contradictions more clearly. The work isn't achieving perfection, but refusing comfortable lies, insisting America finally reckon with the democracy it claims to be.